This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Are we seeing the real end of the Cold War right now playing out? Following behind-the-scenes talks in Washington, Havana, and possibly even the Vatican, American contractor and prisoner in Cuba for 5 years, Alan Gross, was released today. The release heralded new, tangible changes in the relationship between the U.S. and Cuba for the first time since Fidel Castro came to power. We begin this hour exploring what looks like a major diplomatic shift in relations. President Obama announced talks with Cuba will begin, and a U.S. embassy will open in Havana for the first time in more than half a century.
In the most significant changes in our policy in more than 50 years, we will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries. Through these changes, we intend to create more opportunities for the American and Cuban people and begin a new chapter among the nations of the Americas.
Prisoner Alan Gross, now on American soil, who began all of this, was serving a 15-year sentence accused of trying to bring internet services to Cuba. Along with Gross's release, 52 other political prisoners are being released by Cuba. The United States is releasing three accused Cuban spies who've been held in American prison since 1981. And however it looks, officials insist this is not technically a prisoner swap. Today's deal to release Gross and move towards opening talks with Cuba has been in the works secretly for 18 months, in part encouraged by Pope Francis, who held a meeting at the Vatican with American and Cuban officials. This is a nuanced thaw in relations. The United States is easing restrictions on remittances, travel, and banking relations, but technically the decades-old American embargo on Cuba will remain in place for now. It can only be lifted by an act of Congress. Joining us now is Carlos Ayer, professor of history and religious studies at Yale University and author of Waiting for Snow in Havana and Learning to Die in Havana. Professor Ayer, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, thanks for inviting me to your program.
So how does this sort of figure into the history of your own family?
Well, most of my family remained in Cuba, but they've all died off one by one because I left in 1962 when I was only 11. So, the Castro regime split up my family and split up millions of Cuban families, and this doesn't really change anything. For most people, it's more or less a tiny step that the U.S. is taking. It remains to be seen what steps are being taken on the Cuban end. But basically, I don't see anything changing, anything of substance so far. It's too early to tell.
Would you say this is a belated and surprise development that's taken place here, as small as it is?
I'm not the least bit surprised. I think the Obama administration has been working towards this as a goal since 2009. In the last 18 months, it kind of sped up, and Alan Gross was standing in the way. But this has been in the works for a long time. This has been a very deliberate policy shift that the Obama administration has had in mind for a very long time.
Stepping down from your academic tower for just a moment, what does this tangibly mean for exiles in the United States and for people in Cuba, as far as you can tell at this point?
Yeah, as far as we can tell, because we don't know what changes, if any, will take place on the Cuban end. Exiles are not affected by this, but people who live in Cuba, all of the leading opponents of the Castro regime, all of the leading dissidents in Cuba have opposed vehemently the lifting of the embargo. They think it will only cause more repression in Cuba. And this year, so far, we've had more arrests than in the previous 4 or 5 years. So these 53 who are supposedly being released, these 53 political prisoners, that's a small fraction of the total. And it remains to be seen what happens to these 53 after they're freed. So it's very hard to tell. The so-called reforms that Raul Castro has put into effect are not real reforms. The only people who are profiting from these so-called reforms are the children of the oligarchs, such as the children of all the generals who run the country. I think one needs to look at this very carefully and with a measure of suspicion as to what's going to happen at the other end.
Well, that suspicious tone from Carlos Ayer, who's professor of history and religious studies at Yale University, is echoed by a lot of politicians in the United States reacting to the news today. Here's Senator Marco Rubio on Fox News.
Now all of these tyrants around the world know that the U.S. can be had, that it's a pretty easy deal. At a minimum, I would say this. Barack Obama is the worst negotiator of that we've had as president since at least Jimmy Carter and maybe in the modern history of this country.
Putting the sort of rhetoric aside and the partisanship on this matter, which, of course, is famous on this whole issue of Cuba. It's been a very partisan issue going back to the 1960s. You know, should President Obama have gotten some tangible concessions up front here to make you feel better about this, Carlos Ayer?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I think, you know, let's put Alan Gross out of the picture here. I'm so glad that he was finally freed. I've been for the last 5 years that he's been in prison. You know, I've been seething because I knew that the Castro regime would not release this very innocent man unless the U.S. gave him something really big. And the U.S. has. But I think that on the other end, the Cuban end, this is only going to strengthen the Castro regime. Of course, let's look 10 years down the road. Raul is in his 80s. He's not going to stay in power forever, thank God. And it remains to be seen what happens once he's out of the picture, too. So I'm not looking at today. I'm looking 5, 8, 10 years down the road. Once the Castro brothers are gone, then we might see some substantial change. Maybe.
What,
we don't know.
What is the significance of the Vatican apparently being involved in some of the intermediate talks here?
Well, this was news months ago, so it doesn't surprise me in the least. The Cuban Catholic Church is much like the old Russian Orthodox Church was in the Soviet Union, is basically a branch of the government. So that has helped with these negotiations. But I think Pope Francis has put in his 2 cents and has honestly looked for the release of Alan Gross because that was such an injustice. I don't know what other deals they have struck.
But would you say that Pope Francis is playing a kind of parallel role to, you know, Pope John Paul II in the sense that as a Pole, he had enormous influence in the Cold War period of the 1980s. Here, Pope Francis, coming from Argentina, possibly has a similar role to play in the much smaller divisions between the U.S. and Cuba.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. But again, we don't know what's going to happen down the road. The Catholic Church in Cuba is headed by Cardinal Jaime Ortega, who was himself a political prisoner many years ago, but has ever since he rose to lead the hierarchy in the Cuban church, ever since he has been a very, very strong supporter of the Castro regime. And actually on his diocesan website a couple of years ago, there was a statement by him that anyone who wants to change the present political system in Cuba should not have a role in determining the future of Cuba. It's about as far as one can go in saying, let's keep things the same. That message was later removed from the website, so it's impossible to find now. But
Well, you know, among those sort of tea leaves, the president has thanked the Pope for his role in actually, you know, helping to take these steps, or at least for the release of Alan Gross. Do you think there's any argument before we go for a constructive engagement here in the way that the U.S. dealt with South Africa, in that being more engaged means that we're more likely to have a role once the Castro brothers are out?
Well, I think the best way to engage, actually, it's just the opposite direction. The reason that apartheid ended in South Africa was that the entire world boycotted South Africa. And I think that's what should happen with Cuba. I think the only real step towards progress, no matter how many times the U.S. and Cuba talk about this, the real step towards progress for a good future for Cuba is the removal of the Castro dynasty and the reestablishment of a democratic republic. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, thanks in part to this event today,
Carlos,
which
Ayer
is only going to strengthen the Castro dictatorship.
Carlos Ayer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Carlos Ayer is professor of history and religious studies at Yale University, author of Waiting for Snow in Havana and Learning to Die in Havana. Calls for the Castro brothers to establish a democratic regime in Cuba presumably was not the subject of 45 minutes of a conversation by phone between President Obama and Raul Castro, the first presidential-level discussion of significance since the Cuban Revolution. Here is President Obama speaking today on the changes that we've just announced.
To the Cuban people, America extends a hand of friendship. Some of you have looked to us as a source of hope, and we will continue to shine a light of freedom. Others have seen us as a former colonizer, intent on controlling your future. José Martí once said, "Liberty is the right of every man to be honest." Today, I'm being honest with you. We can never erase the history between us, but we believe that you should be empowered to live with dignity and self-determination. Cubans have a saying about daily life. No es fácil. It's not easy. Today, the United States wants to be a partner in making the lives of ordinary Cubans a little bit easier, more free, more prosperous.
President Barack Obama speaking today, heralding a thaw in Cuban-American relations, perhaps the first significant step in a half century.